Hi, I'm Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center on Vashon Island, Washington. We're glad to be able to bring you these podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about our Zen Center, please visit our website at pscc.org.
Good morning, everyone. It's nice to see you all here today. And I understand there's going to be a service this evening as well. That'll be a lot of fun. Today is always, the last day is always kind of a special day, right? We're looking forward to the new year. So there's a sense of anticipation about it. And I was... When I was asked for a title for this talk, the title that I gave was Good Morning, A Reflection on Clarity and Confusion, hoping that by now I would have a talk to go with the title. It's always kind of hard to do a title way ahead of when you're going to speak because you don't know exactly what's going to be going on in your head, but this one actually works out very well, so I'm happy about that. I was thinking about Good Morning. When we went back east, Charlie and I went back east at Thanksgiving to see his extended family, all on his mother's side of the family, and this is a group of four sisters that they were raised in North Carolina, so there's a very strong Southern grounding to their family culture. And you absolutely have to say good morning to everybody first thing before anything else happens. So I had to keep track of everybody. It's like, did I say good morning to this person, that person? You have to just make sure you really checked in with everybody that way. It's not a formality. It's really a nice thing to do. It's a really good custom to get into because it's really, if it's offered genuinely, it's an offering that says, may this really be a good morning for you. May it be a good morning for you. And it's a really useful way to consider how we approach our lives in Zen as well. It reminds me, every time I say good morning, I'm reminded of a koan that's in the Blue Cliff Record, which I'm going to read. We don't normally do koans in any kind of formal way here, but this one is one of my most favorite. Umon, who's one of the most important Chinese Zen teachers, said this one. Umon addressed the assembly and said, I am not asking you about the days before the 15th of the month, but what about after the 15th? Come and give me a word about those days. Nobody said anything. So he himself gave the answer for them. Every day is a good day. That every day is a good day is a very famous Zen saying. Oftentimes you'll see it on a calligraphy. It's a nice one for tea rooms. So if you do Japanese tea ceremony, it's a lovely scroll. It's actually one of my favorites to see in the tea room. And there's some variations on that. For example, the scroll that I have for my tea room doesn't say every day is a good day. It says today is a good day. So it even it nails it down even more. There's every day is a good day. There's a little wiggle room, you know. It's kind of on average every day is a good day. Some are better than others. Some are not so good. But this says today is a good day. So there's no wiggle room there. And I like that about it. It's today and today and today. It's really asking us to say that. There's a slight difference in emphasis, but the point the koan is making, if we talk about it, is there are no so-called bad days. There's no so-called useless days. No days that require we have an opinion about them, frankly. They're just happening. things are unrolling as they do, and we don't really have to have an opinion about it at all. So each day offers up what it has to offer, just like when we say good morning, we're offering that. And actually the character, the Chinese character that's translated in most koan collections as good is not, that's really not what that character means. It's konomi, which means preference, my preference, or what's favorable, or what I'm fond of. So oftentimes we say, this is so-and-so's konomi, it's their preference. They like things, they like their steak done well. That would be a konomi, for example. So that character has that connotation. When we say good, there's a sort of a judgment quality about it. But the actual meaning points to what this is about. It's a key point because when we talk about in this koan, the days before the 15th and the days after the 15th. This is referring to, 15th is referring to the full moon, which is a symbol for enlightenment. So essentially the question in the koan is, I'm not going to ask you about what happens before enlightenment, but what about the days after enlightenment? And when we listen to it in that way, this every day is a good day has a great deal of meaning to it. So when we practice Zen, we have some sense of wanting to get something, wanting to reach some sort of a goal. That's our preference. We don't want to sit and have it be a so-called bad sit where our minds don't settle down. We like the ones where our minds settle pretty quickly and we're kind of, you know, scooting along in a somewhat blissful state. And then we come back and all sorts of stuff is happening around us, and that's not so much fun. And we'd like to have things be a little bit more blissful more of the time, right? I mean, that's what we're hoping, is that we'll have some sort of enlightenment or some sort of awakening, and then things are going to be more like that than they are now. So he's addressing this when he says in the koan, not talking about the days before, but the days after. Let me hear from you where you're really caught on this so-called enlightenment. I like the words clarity and confusion better than saying enlightenment and not enlightened or ignorant might be another word, deluded. I like clarity and confusion better, because that really reflects more the mental state that we're in for these. And really the difference between clarity and confusion is not, there's not some special state, it's not some alternative universe that we, you know, end up in through some special experience. But it's really meaning that we're not so entangled in that sense of a small self, that personal, kind of permanently established, self-contained sense of self that we nurture in ourselves. But when we can move beyond that, then we begin to awaken to more of what's going on. So that's really what this practice is about, is moving beyond that very limited personal perspective, our own private self perspective. How do we do that? That, of course, is the big question. How do we move beyond the confines of our own self-interest? And historically, Zen has talked about two different ways to do that. One is called the sudden school of enlightenment, and another is the gradual school of enlightenment. And some people say that sudden roughly is equivalent to our school of Zen, the Rinzai school of Zen, which is why we work with the koans to try to crack ourselves open with these little riddles. And then the gradual might be more a Soto approach, where you're not looking for some big event to occur. The sudden approach really kind of implies a leap, a discontinuity in a sense between before the 15th and after the 15th. It's like something magical happens in a way. And the gradual approach asks us to just kind of let go gradually of a sense of trying to achieve a goal and just open up gradually to a more spacious way of seeing and being. And it's kind of like getting soaked through over time by a fine mist. You don't really notice it. You don't need an umbrella, but if you're out there long enough, you're soaked through. And that's more how the gradual approach would be seen. And there's risks to clinging to one way or the other, right? The risk of saying, well, I don't need an enlightenment experience. I'm just going to sit here and kind of calm down and gradually get soaked through. Is we can bebop along for a long time in a kind of mediocre state of still being quite contained in our small self, our sense of small self. We're a lot easier to get along with, maybe because we don't get so jumpy and upset as easily. That may happen, but still we're kind of stuck there. That's the risk of not having a sense of striving for something. The risk for the other way is that people can get kind of weird and competitive about it. It's like, oh, yeah, I had this experience, I had that experience, and there's the risk of hanging on to that, and then our sense of small self kind of coalesces around, oh, I've had some cool experiences, I'm a good Zen student. So that's the risk either way. And the distinction, so really the distinction between sudden and gradual is kind of arbitrary. Anything that we do, we have to begin by preparing the ground and not expecting anything to happen suddenly, right? Just like when we plant a seed in the right soil, the right climate, we've done a little bit of work on the garden to give it the optimal conditions. But we don't necessarily see any changes until all of a sudden one morning you realize there's a bit of green poking up. So the question is a plant growing suddenly or gradually? And the answer is yes, right? The answer is yes. It's both sudden and gradual. And the reality is that one condition doesn't exist without the other. We can't talk about gradual unless we can talk about sudden and vice versa. It's a very important point that whenever we get stuck on one side of the equation, one side of enlightenment or the other, we're missing the whole picture. This is really important. And so what we're doing is essentially we're working with whatever conditions we have to create a bigger container, a broader perspective for ourselves, right? That's really what this is about. It's one of the reasons that virtually every Buddhist tradition starts with the practice of generosity or dhamma, where we're giving something. For some people, that's the only practice they ever have. In many of the Southeast Asian countries, lay people, it's entirely a practice of generosity, giving money, giving food to the monks, helping around the temple for festival days, that sort of thing, with the idea that they can kind of build a bank account of merit or of virtue, and continue their practice that way. But more to the point, the generosity is a way to bring us out of our own self-centeredness, to say, what do other people need? Just very basically, I need to pay attention to what others around me might need and not just my own needs. And so gradually over time, as we practice generosity deeper and deeper, we begin to see that, oh, in the process of giving, I'm actually receiving from the other person. They're giving me the opportunity to be generous. And so the one can't happen without the other. And gradually we open to this sense of interconnection. It's a very, very important point. And also, we need to be grounded in both these perspectives, the sense that there is no separation between self and other. And also, at the same time, we need to be well grounded in the reality of separation of self and other. We are separate people. If I take care of my needs, it doesn't necessarily take care of your needs. If I eat something, you may still be hungry. So understanding that there are separations, there are boundaries, as well as interconnection. The one can't happen without the other. So we have to be grounded in both those perspectives. And it's not contradictory. We might say, well, how can we be interconnected and also separate at the same time? It's very similar, you know, if you think about the earth is round, and we've all learned that in school, that the earth is round, and those of us that have gone on plane trips may begin to see a little bit of the curve of the horizon. It's certainly the basis on which airplane flights are made. They follow these great circles around this circular planet. But as an everyday reality, we walk on a flat earth, right? And we build our furniture to be on a flat earth. We build our houses to be on a flat earth. So as a day-to-day reality, the earth is flat. There's no question of that. But we also know that the earth is round. So they're not contradictory. They are a difference in perspective. If we look at the earth from outer space, we can easily see that it's round. But if we're here on the ground, day to day, we can easily see that the earth is flat, and this is not a contradiction. This separateness and interconnectedness are the same way. They're two different perspectives. And we need both. We need both. There's this very famous saying by the Tibetan teacher Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche, who said, the bad news is you're falling through the air. Nothing to hang on to, no parachute. The good news is there's no ground. Right? The good news is that there's no ground. And we do kind of experience our lives in that way. So we're falling through space, a continuous kind of low-level anxiety of what am I going to hit next? What's going to hit next? What's tomorrow going to bring? And we brace ourselves for when we hit the ground. And what Rinpoche is saying is that truly freedom is knowing there is no place that we're going to hit. There is no final resting place, first of all, where everything's going to be okay and pleasant and easy. There's no ground like that for sure. And he said also there's no final resting place where everything's all messed up and a disaster. This is true. We just keep falling and falling and falling, and the scenery keeps changing around us, and we can kind of go, whoa, that was interesting. See what's coming up next in a different kind of way, but without that tension that, oh, if only I could just get things to settle down and stay put and be the way I want them to be, right? So freedom is really being able to be in that not knowing state, that falling state, to be open to whatever life brings us, even death, right? Without having an opinion about it. I'm waiting this week for results from a CAT scan that I had last week. I have ovarian cancer, as most of you know, and they wanted to do a CAT scan. The doctor did because of some symptoms that were a concern for her. But I won't know the results until next Wednesday. Now, I could spend the whole week kind of tensed up about it. It's not going to change whatever the results are. So I am doing what I can over and over to let go and let go and let go and not be in that state of anxiety about what's going to hit. What am I going to hear Wednesday? I'm going to hear something, so might as well wait until then to know what that is. And that's that to be able to do that, or at least know that that's what you should be able to do, is getting there. If I can at least say, you know, I'm feeling anxious right now. I don't need to feel anxious right now. Let me go do something else. Or just kind of notice the anxiety and how it feels in my stomach. And then, okay, that's right, anxiety. And then move on. This is what we're looking for. Some distance between ourselves and that feeling. So that's true clarity. And another thing that Rinpoche said was that being awake, being enlightened, means seeing our confusion more clearly, seeing all these things more clearly. So we're more aware, oh, I'm anxious, I'm fearful, I'm happy. All of these things, they're not just expectations and assumptions that we have about ourselves, but this is really what we see. And there's also an important thing here, which is we don't have to assess or judge how we're doing right now. If I'm anxious, I'm anxious. I'm not going to add to that by beating myself up for being anxious. Oh, I'm, you know, I've been practicing for 30 plus years and I'm supposedly a Zen teacher and I shouldn't be anxious. That's crap, frankly. You know, if I'm anxious, I need to be able to own that and say, man, I'm really off today. This is not a good situation. I'm anxious, right? Or angry, or whatever it is, upset. But I don't need to beat myself up about it. And that's a huge difference between being able to discern what's going on and what's appropriate to do and judging ourselves for it. So we always need to be able to discern. We do not need to add judgment onto that discernment. So this is a key part of it. Going back to the koan, let's don't get caught on, is this a good day or a bad day? Is this a day I like or I dislike? So that's really what he's driving at, what Umon is driving at when he says, every day is a good day. You know, every day has something to offer. So don't look forward to the days after the 15th. It's not going to be particularly any better necessarily. You might not like it. That's what Suzuki Roshi says. He says, don't think so much about enlightenment. You might not like it when you get it. So I was, preparing this morning, I was the image that came up in my mind that really kind of encapsulates this is my father. Back in the 1970s, my mother and father and I were on a train. We took the Trans-Siberian Railroad across all of Siberia. It's a 9-day train trip, long train trip. And initially, there was this fabulous food on there. And then after a couple of days, all the foreigners but us got off the train, and then there was basically not much to eat. The Russians that were on the train had brought bread, and they could jump off at the train stations and buy things from the vendors on the train stations, but we were kind of stuck with whatever was in the dining car. Although my mother jumped out early on and grabbed some very dubious pickled eggs and fermented milk, and my father and I just went, no, we'll take our chances in the dining car. And it was a good thing because she was quite ill for the whole rest of the trip, which was why my dad and I were in the dining car, just the two of us. Nobody else was there. And the server came up to us, handed us these huge multi-page National Soviet menus that they had. And we did what you do, which is look for all the handwritten prices by the items that they might have. Didn't guarantee it, but these were the ones that they might have. So he went through, and in his limited Russian, it's like, do you have this? No. No borscht, no pickle soup, no bread, certainly no butter. And we went through like this for a while. And finally, he looked at the waiter and he said, "Why don't you just tell me what you do have, and we'll go with that?" And he said, "Well, what we have right now is noodles and chocolate." That was it. Noodles and chocolate. And so my father put down the menu, and he looked at the waiter as though he had walked into the dining car craving noodles and chocolate, and said, "We would both like the noodles and some chocolate." Just like that. And it's funny, but it's actually a very profound act. A very profound act. We had several days left. This was what was left on the train, folks, was noodles and chocolate. And my father said yes to it. He said yes to it. He didn't get angry. He didn't get scared. He just said yes. And we sat there and enjoyed these steaming bowls of wiggly white noodles, no condiments, and a little plate with squares of chocolate. And the Soviet chocolate is actually quite good, so that was a good thing. But it's not a blissful state. He was worried about my mom. He was worried about how we were going to eat tomorrow. But right now, yes, to the noodles and chocolate. And that's a real good indicator of having a bigger container for our life, a broader perspective for our life, to be able to say yes to whatever comes our way. Doesn't mean we like it, but we can appreciate it. We can say, "This is a good day."
This podcast has been brought to you by the Puget Sound Zen Center. Thanks so much for listening. To learn more about our community, you can visit our website at pszc.org.